A couple of years ago, I was gathered with my close group of friends from seminary. We still keep in touch almost daily with Facebook messages and texts back and forth, but we try every once in a while to get together in person because of the extreme gift of being with people who have known you and watched you grow and change and love you still. And at the end of our time together, our last dinner of our last gathering, one of us suggested that we spend the time affirming one another. In person, being able to give each other some of strength that we see in each of these six women. So we went around the table and put one of us in the spotlight, and then the rest of the five of us would tell her the things that we appreciated about her and value about her, the things that we saw as the gifts that she was giving to the world and to her full-time ministry. When I got to be in the spotlight, what I remember about that experience is the warmth and care and compassion of my friends, the power of really being seen by them. And I did feel that this was going to buoy and strengthen me for at least days, if not months and years to come. But the only specific thing I remember being said about me in that time is that one of my friends said, "Steph, you always have it so together." And I was surprised at first because I'm pretty sure I'd spent the previous 4 days proving how not together I was. There had been confessions of my failures and my doubts. I had cried. I had laughed hysterically. I had just poured it all out there. So it was a little bit funny to hear these people who I loved so deeply and who loved me say that I had it all together when I thought I had clearly proven that was not true. The other thing about that statement, and I think one of the reasons that it sticks with me, is because that's my siren song. That's actually what I would like everyone to think about me, that I have it all together. That I am somehow masterfully holding all of the things I do, a full-time professional life, a family that I'm raising. I run half marathons, people. I want you to believe that this is who I am. It's this tension between who I am and who I feel like I should be, or what I want people to believe about me when they see me. As I read from Luke chapter 6 today, as Jesus speaks to his gathered disciples and this big crowd, sharing with them the beatitudes, the blessings on some very surprising people, I hear that same dynamic of who we are and who we think we should be. When Jesus starts his blessings, I, like many in that crowd that day, appreciate and feel the comfort of the blessings coming to those who are poor. Because there are times when I feel the deficit, when I know that something in my life is scarce. Sometimes it's because I feel like I'm not very good at it, but more often it's because and looking at the world not from a place of being enough or having enough, but instead always feeling that there's not enough. I hear the comfort and the blessing for those who are hungry, because though my belly is full most days, there are things that I try to fill into spaces of need, things that I hunger for that I know aren't fully satisfying me. Because it's easier to scroll through my phone or binge watch one more episode of that show than it is to really be quiet and still and spend time with myself and my thoughts, because I don't always like what they offer me. And I know that I am one who weeps. It seems like my entire range of emotions can leak out of my eyes at times. The sadness and the struggle and the pain, but also the passion and the joy and the commitment. I am so grateful that Jesus' first words of blessing are to those that we don't expect to be blessed, those folks that we often overlook and who don't seem to measure up. Jesus offers blessings, and then he continues to speak to those who seem to be in the opposite situation. Woe to you who are rich. Woe to you who are full now. Woe to you who laugh. But a woe is not the opposite of a blessing. It's not a curse or a pushing down. It's more like an alert signal, a warning, a pay attention. Because while who we really are may be the ones who are poor and hungry and weeping, we also have those temporary states of existence where we feel wealthy and consoled, full and laughing. And if we don't pay attention, we have the possibility of missing God's presence and blessing for us in. And we have the possibility of missing the acknowledgement of God's consistent blessing of those who find themselves with tears on their faces or hunger in their bellies. We read these Beatitudes on All Saints Day commemoration today. And there are a couple times in the church year that I really feel pull us to an honesty that we don't always have when we walk into this space. Ash Wednesday is one of those times. On that night, we get willingly out of our seats to have dirt placed on our foreheads and to hear that we are human and messy and temporary. I believe All Saints is another one of these honest days, a day where we are asked and invited to bring our grief and our memories and our tears, where who we are as God's created people includes the fact that our lives here on earth is not forever, and that those who have loved and nurtured and cared for us don't stay with us forever either. Not here in this world and this earth. On this honest day, we also have the tangle of who we are and who we think we should be. Partly because of some of our experiences and education about what a saint is exactly. Some of our different Christian traditions paint it in different ways. So it's kind of the default to think about a saint as someone who has died and someone who did something really, really good in their lives so they could earn the title of saint before their name. We think of those after whom we name churches, St. Peter, St. Paul, St. Mary Magdalene. And we're probably also willing to acknowledge key figures who have shaped the landscape of the world to be one more full of mercy and love and kindness. People like Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr. We get tangled up in the idea that sainthood is equated with greatness, and we miss the opportunity to hear and see and understand who we are as saints. Because Jesus' words aren't to the ones who seem to be in a comfortable position of power. Jesus' blessing and recognition begins with those who are poor and weeping and hungry, whose everyday ordinary struggles are still connecting them to the power and presence of God in their lives. And those who find themselves consoled and full and laughing have the opportunity to be ones who are also aware of God's power and presence, a power and presence that shapes the kingdom not because we do anything to earn our place there, but simply because we are beloved by God. On All Saints Day, we are remembering, commemorating, celebrating, looking toward all the saints, which includes those of us who find that we live in the messy, complicated tension of who we are, and we're trying to let go of who we think we should be. There's a little detail of church architecture that has tried over generations, centuries, millennia, in fact, to put something that we can touch and experience to help us understand this whole communion of saints. Our railing up here, where we will kneel shortly for Christ's holy meal, is in a half circle. And when we are kneeling at this half circle, we look around and we see those who we know and love, family and friends. We see strangers, folks that we haven't been introduced to. We see people who filled out their ballot differently than us this weekend and hopefully turned it in. We see folks who maybe we disagreed on a council decision recently, or we have a different idea about how the money of this community should be spent, but we are all gathered here, invited to Christ's table. We can see and touch and experience this. And it's a full circle that we are connected to. The whole communion of saints extends this circle beyond our understanding, our building, and all we can do is stretch our imaginations to see that when we glance around and touch shoulders here, we are also glancing around and touching shoulders with those who have gone before us, with the grandmothers and grandfathers, with the children and the aunts and the uncles, with the strangers and the friends who have entered God's eternal kingdom. Today I want to share with you a quote from a saint in my life. I didn't know her personally, but her writing grounded and inspired me. And Rachel joined the whole communion, the eternal communion of saints earlier this year. And she wrote that this is what God's kingdom looks like. A bunch of outcasts and oddballs gathered at a table, not because they're rich or worthy or good, but because they are hungry, because they said yes. And there's always room for more. Beloved saints of God, today is a day of memory and connection. And it's a day of even hesitatingly beginning to accept that we too are the outcasts and the oddballs at this table in God's whole communion of saints. Thanks be to God. Amen.